Golf Smarter, number 623, is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Download the SeatGeek app today and enter promo code GOLFSMARTER for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And stay tuned after our interview for another installment of the Golf Smarter Academy presented by Health IQ. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/golfsmarter or mention the promo code GOLFSMARTER when you talk to a Health IQ agent. What's the deal with single-length irons? Bryson DeChambeau plays them on the tour, and now you can too with Jacob Bowden.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Jacob.
Well, thanks, Fred. It's a pleasure to be back. I guess this is, what, my fourth time back?
Yeah, it is your fourth time back because you've had this amazing little journey that you've gone through since we first met, and we'll get to that in a minute. But the focus of our conversation today that we will definitely get to in our second half is you've partnered recently with Tom Wishon, one of our favorite people. He's been on the show a dozen times, literally. He is, to me, the global spokesperson, unofficial spokesperson for custom fit clubs, custom fitting, and getting fitted for clubs. I mean, he's remarkable.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's the amount of stories that he has and the amount of knowledge that he has. If you're at all into golf and savvy about equipment and wanting to learn about equipment, if you start poking around any little bit online, eventually you'll come across his stuff.
And he's, absolutely.
He's just been a pioneer as far as books and designs and creating teaching programs for club fitters. I mean, if he's kind of like the guy for for equipment design and custom club fitting.
Yep. The guy with three E's. Absolutely. And what is it that you guys are doing together?
Now we're working on a single length irons project. We originally met back in 2006. I was just kind of like a lot of people wanting to, I was starting my golf journey then. I started pursuing this golf journey in 2003. And I was just looking for ways to improve my game and ways to get an edge. And I was trying to learn more about equipment. And that's how I found out about Tom. And I read one of his books and I was like, I had a question out of his book. So I just looked up his website and emailed his website, figuring some, you know, random person was going to respond back to me. And sure enough, like, he personally responded back to me, which oftentimes he'll do with, with people that, want to contact him, which is, it's one of the great things about him. He really, puts a personal touch on a lot of things. And so that started around 2006. And then, I was interested in doing a single length irons project, and we had over the years emailed a lot. He was kind of a equipment mentor for me, and we became sort of email pen pals. And in 2013, he invited me out to his facility in Durango in Colorado.
Whoa.
And I went out there after the Speed Golf World Championships, which is, I believe, one of the things we talked about last time I was on the podcast here. And we just started hashing it out on a whiteboard, and 2.5 years of testing and development, and voila, we launched the project together. And it's Sterling Irons, this thing, what we ended up calling him, it's kind of been his semi-retirement project. So it's
fabulous.
Fun thing for us to do together.
Well, we're going to talk a lot about single length irons. But first, you know, you have such an interesting story. You were a desk jockey, like, you know, you just had a regular job, right? And decided that this is not for you. You wanted to pursue a career in golf.
Well, I originally went to school to be a pharmacist.
And
at that age, sports was always kind of a first love. But I never I didn't really give too much consideration about what I was going to do for a career, I guess like a lot of kids. And I thought, I was working in Walmart's pharmacy in high school, and I was like, well, I could be a pharmacist. It looks pretty easy to do. I'm pretty good at math and science.
And my, As you're stocking the shelves, you're looking over at the pharmacist sitting there reading a magazine, and you're going, I want to do that when I grow up.
Well, it was just kind of like a, I don't know what to do. And I was kind of too lazy to think about what I wanted to do, or maybe wasn't willing maybe to be honest about what I wanted to do. So I was like, oh, I'll just pursue a, I'll just go to pharmacy school. And one of the reasons why I picked the pharmacy school.
I'm sorry for laughing at you.
Oh, it's okay.
I just like, golf, pharmacy school. I'm bored. Okay.
Well, basketball and baseball were my first loves with sports. And the pharmacy school that I decided to pick, one of the reasons why I decided to go there, it was the only school I applied to, was they had a Division II basketball team. So I was like, cool, I can play basketball in college. And that was probably my primary reason for going there. And then I ended up not becoming a pharmacist. And right after college, I just took a regular corporate job, and I was still really into sports. And I was playing in an adult baseball league. And a scout for the White Sox was there.
Wow.
And they saw me, and they were like, hey, we're looking to fill out our they had a couple slots that they still needed to fill in the lower parts of their like single A, double A kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I got invited up to a tryout in at the old Metrodome in Minnesota.
I love that place.
That was such a cool, one of the coolest things that happened about that was, so I got to play on the field in the Metrodome. And I remember I was kind of like a little bit starstruck. Like, I'm playing like in this big stadium, and like, this is so cool. And of course,
What year was that?
2000, I think. And
I hate to one up you on this one, but I'm going to. The year that the Twins won the World Series in 1991, I threw out the first pitch at one of their games. Not during the World Series in August, and I did get to go to game 6 and 7 of that World Series. And after game 7, when they won, and Kirby Puckett, Jack Morris, huge stars in that, I got to go down on the field. And then I was standing outside the locker room. They were celebrating inside. Tony Oliva came out and sprayed us with champagne.
Cool.
That's my Metrodome story. Awesome. Sorry to one up you on that one, but I just love that story.
Well, was it really noisy in there? I remember watching the broadcast there, and because it was a dome, the sound was just like insulated there. And I remember on the TV, on the telecast, they always showed the decibel meter or whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, there was no one in the stadium when I was on the field.
Oh, wow. So if you hit the ball well, you can hear it echoing all over the entire stadium.
Oh, and that was the thing about it was like, so the first day was there's 110 guys there or so, and they cut it down to about 30 for an inter squad game on the second day. And I made the second day.
Cool.
And I got up to bat, and I hit a foul ball off the wall in right field. So it was long enough to be a home run, but it was foul. So I was like, whoa, that was awesome. It was one of those ones where you just catch it right on the sweet spot of the bat, and it feels like nothing. But then all of a sudden it just takes off like a rocket. And just like you're saying, because there's no one in the stadium, you could hear the sound of it, and it just kind of echoed throughout the stadium.
It sounds like an explosion.
And then I proceeded to strike out. So so that was the sad end to it. But the fun part was like getting to hit a ball off that right field wall there. So not quite as like, you know, being in the World Series or, you know, getting to go to the World Series like you did and throwing out a first pitch, but still a fun experience.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing.
But anyway.
Okay. So now, so now your college career, is a big question mark.
I'm not going to the NBA. I'm not going. I had my chance for baseball. That's done. So I think like, well, I'll just, you know, I'll do my corporate job. I'm not sure where it's going to go, but I'll just do this for now, and it'll be a placeholder until I get to do something else that I want to do. And then during that time, I wrote down a bucket list and just kind of started checking little things off the list to, as a way of kind of hoping to hone in on what was next. And one of the things on the list was, going to every major sports event once. So like go to one World Series like you did, go to a Super Bowl, go to, you know, NBA Finals, all that. And I was down in Atlanta teaching a course for the engineering company I was working for. And the last day got canceled. The Friday got canceled. So I had an extra day. And I was like, wow, wait a minute. The PGA Championship is here in Atlanta. This was the 2001 PGA Championship.
Cool.
And I was like, I can go out there and I'll check that thing off the list. And so I got out there. I was just out by myself walking around. And you know how at a tour event there, they rope off the, especially at a major, they rope off the fairways so that the gallery can't get onto the fairways. And then when the players pass, they open up the ropes and you can cross, they can go across. And there was this one point where, for whatever reason, I was the only person crossing this one particular crossway. And I got out into the middle of the fairway, and it was the most surreal thing. It was like this, the sky lit up, and like I had this kind of warm feeling come over me. And I was like, wait a minute, I could be a professional golfer. Because I was sitting out on this, on the fairway, and I had the view of being inside the ropes and looking out at the galleries. And that was kind of the first idea that I had of like pursuing a golf career. And at
Were you able to hear the chorus of voices going, oh? As the lights came on.
There's a big angel choir.
Exactly. You can see. It's so cinematic, Jacob. I mean, I can't believe.
And so I thought, you know, at the time I was a 14 handicapper. So I was like, you know, this is silly for thinking about doing this. But then I kind of thought it over for about a year. And then my work situation got bad enough, the environment got bad enough, we got bought out a couple times, and my bosses were always good, but a lot of times my boss's bosses weren't that great, so I got frustrated with like working, and I was like, you know, with golf, maybe I'm not that good yet, but maybe if I quit my job and I just play all day instead of, you know, sitting at my desk all day, maybe I can get good enough, because if you're healthy and you're motivated and keep away from injury, you can basically, you know, play until you're 60 or so as far as having a tour career. So I was like, you know, I'm just, maybe I won't, maybe I'll make it, maybe I won't, but I got to give it a try. So I quit my job and moved out to California and gave it a go. And that was when I was 27.
And did you hear the theme to the Beverly Hillbillies? California is a place you ought to be. So they loaded up the truck and moved to Beverly. Anyway, and so you came out as a 14 handicap. You thought, okay, I'm gonna try to be a pro, and then you started Long Drive Championship and teaching and right all that stuff. We've talked about this multiple times, and just this journey you've had. It sounds like you found what you wanted to do.
Well, I still have, I don't feel like I've fulfilled all of my playing aspirations yet with regular golf. I've been fortunate to have played in, I don't know, 30 or so tour events already. Not PGA tour events, but just many tours around the world. And I've done US Open qualifying, British Open qualifying. And so I've had a lot of great experiences, but yeah. So I still feel like there's more to come with that. I don't know.
Did you have any impressive finishes in those 30 events? Any finishes you want to remember?
I probably made about, I'd have to count, but maybe 6 or 8 cuts out of 30 events, and
okay.
Had some rounds in the 60s. So,
wow.
You know, for this 27-year-old 14 handicapper to then go and put up some rounds in tournament conditions and tour events with cuts and, you know, make cuts and shoot some rounds in the 60s, whatever happens from here, in a way, you know, it's already been a win.
Yeah.
So I'd still like to take it a little bit further.
And does that motivate you to grind it out even more, or go, okay, I got the taste of that. Yeah, I'm probably not going to get much better than this, so let's move to the next thing.
Well, I still, for some reason, I still feel like I haven't played my best yet.
Hmm.
So there's
that's golf.
Still something in there that I feel like I could get better and play better. So, you know, we'll see what's to come with that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's golf. It's like, that's what I love about golf is that there's no perfect and you can always walk away going, okay, I can do one stroke better next time. I can definitely do better next time. That's what mm-hmm. that's what I love about the game. That's just the amazing part about it. So mm-hmm. so much fun. And real briefly on the long drive championship, can you give me a quick one on that?
Well, so I started pursuing things as a golf, regular golf, and I got taken under the wing of this Mike Austin guy who had the Guinness record 515-yard drive.
Wow.
And I got taken under the wing of his friend, Dan Schauger. And Dan introduced me to Mike and kind of the three of us. They helped develop me early on. And I started to become a long hitter relatively quickly. And I won a Pinnacle Distance Challenge. And I started to have some success with that. And I was like, I could get better at long drive quicker than I could at regular golf. So I tried to do... I won some qualifiers for the world championships and I learned a lot. What I learned as far as the training aspects of being able to hit the ball farther, that kind of set the basis for one of the other projects that I've been doing since 2007, Swingman Golf. I got a lot of great, although I didn't go on to win the world championships, and I don't know if I really have the desire to do that anymore, but I got a lot out of it as far as learning about how to hit the ball long and how to train other people how to hit the ball long. So it was kind of a good it was an interesting and fun kind of sidestep from regular golf that got me a lot of good experiences and good knowledge, and I still keep up with the sport, though. I talk to and have interviewed a lot of the top players, so it's still an interest of mine.
I've always found long drive fascinating as well. As a matter of fact, episodes number 102 and 210 of Golf Smarter both feature long drive champions. Sean the Beast Pfister, 210.
Yes.
Fred Hooter,
yes.
102. Those are the episodes. So if anybody's interested in that, you can definitely go back into the archives and hear those. And we're going to talk more about this single length iron concept with Tom Wishon. We're going to take a quick break for a commercial right now. This episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by SeatGeek. Yeah, buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated and confusing, but there's a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're standing out in the parking lot or the venue waiting for the last-minute deal, planning a special night out for Valentine's Day, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. Even though I'm the most discerning shopper in our family, we all prefer experiences over gifts. So that's another great opportunity to use SeatGeek to find the perfect personalized gift. There's nothing quite like seeing a great concert or your favorite team in person. And SeatGeek will get you closer to the action at a great value. I've had the SeatGeek app on my phone for many years, and it's not just the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. It's my favorite way. So make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of tickets. From sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Here's the best part. Golf Smarter listeners, Golf Martyrs, get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. So if you haven't done so yet, download the SeatGeek app onto your phone or tablet and enter the promo code GOLFSMARTER right now. That's promo code GOLFSMARTER for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Jazz hands, yeah! now you want to get into the idea of manufacturing some clubs with a name on it, and you partnered up with Tom, who's amazing. What is it that captivated your interest? Why did you get so interested in the idea of single length irons?
Well, so I was such a late starter. I was 14 handicap and 27. I wasn't like this junior kid prodigy that was, you know, winning U.S. amateur and like all this big collegiate player or whatever. I was a late starter and a late developer. And in order for me to get good enough to turn professional and then have any kind of success as a professional, I knew I had a lot of ground to cover. So I was just really, really open-minded about and searching for ways that how can I do things differently and better than the other guys to cover this ground faster. And so when I was thinking about it from an equipment standpoint, I thought, you know what, wouldn't I be more consistent if all my irons were the same length? So I was starting to wonder this around 2006 or seven. And so I started looking around online for it. And keep in mind, at that time, there wasn't as much available online. YouTube was just kind of getting started. So it was hard to find stuff. But I came across a company that was selling them, and I bought myself a set. And I'd have to look back at my records, but I think within 3 months, I shot my first round, tournament round in the 60s. In a pro event using those irons, and my iron play got way more consistent than it had ever been. So I was like, man, I'm sold on this single length concept. And then in 2010, you may remember the USGA changed their rules on the grooves.
As a matter of fact, I was just looking through my archives list again and found two episodes with Tom Wishon from 2010 talking about his thought on the USGA rulings and how the changes. And we did two episodes on that. And part of our conversation was talking about single length clubs too. So those are episodes 219 and 220. If you want to go back to 2010, sorry to self promote here, but that's why it's there.
Oh, that's a perfect little segue there.
Yeah, exactly.
The related topics. So the USGA changed their rules, and then the two or three companies that were doing single length at the time didn't want to update their grooves because their main target market was just the average golfer, not someone that's going to play in a professional event. So I could no longer play the single length irons. So I was like, oh man. So I tried to convince the guy I knew the owners of the companies, and was like, hey, can please update your grooves so I can play these things again? And
why was it that the grooves stopped the manufacturers from updating the single length? What was it about the grooves that they felt single lengths was not going to help it?
Well, they were small companies, so for them,
it costs so much to recalibrate everything.
Yeah, you have to purchase and build an entire new set of tooling,
right,
to make a new club. So for them, the cost investment just wasn't worth it to, so me, like one person that needed the grooves could play them. They were just like, well, we're just fine selling how we are, and this isn't going to affect amateurs for 10 years, so we'll just keep doing what we're doing. And okay, I understand that. And then there were also a few other changes I thought could be made as well, because I was selling the clubs, and so I had a little bit of an experience of like what could be improved with those. So I started searching around for other people that would be interested in maybe doing a project together, because I felt like I knew what needed to be fixed aside from just the grooves with single length. And I actually went to Tom one time and asked him, and at the time he wasn't too keen on single length. So he was like, nah, I don't really want to do it.
Yeah.
So then I went to David Adell and asked David Adell if he wanted to do a project. And he didn't either. And then, some time passed, and then for whatever reason, I felt compelled to ask Tom again. And this time, for whatever reason, yeah, and you could ask him why he changed his mind.
Yeah, we're going to have to get him back.
But for this, for some reason, he changed his mind. And he's like, yeah, you know, there's, you're right about this. There's definitely some improvements could be made. We could really bring the single length technology that's currently out there vastly forward as far as its performance and how it works and all that. So we met up in his facility after the Speed Golf World Championships, another sidestep of mine.
That's right. We talked about that too.
And I don't know what episode that was, but there's another one if people want to go back and listen to that one. So Tom and I, it literally, as these things go, I mean, you see a product in the stores and stuff, and we literally just started on a whiteboard. We sat down and Tom was like, all right, what do you know? What needs to be fixed? What's working? What's not working? And so I drew it all out on the board. And then I was like, so this is the good. This is the bad we need to fix. How do we do that? And then he used his club design knowledge to come up with what was needed to be done to do those things, keep the bad and or keep the good, fix the bad. And so we took about 2.5 years of back and forth testing and developing and tweaking. And finally, we were able to launch in April 2016. And by this time, completely unplanned by us, Bryson DeChambeau started having success.
Yeah, and I was wondering when his name was going to come up in this conversation, because he's a huge advocate of the single length iron, but he's also, do you want to say a scientist out there on the golf course? I mean, he looks at it and approaches it in such a different way than any instructor is going to bring you to.
I think he was like me in a lot of ways, in the sense that he was just looking for advantages. He had like a math science background, and he was willing to try things in untraditional, outside the box ways. And him coming on the scene was completely unrelated to what Tom and I were doing. It just happened that when we were ready to launch, he was starting to come on the scene. So it actually helped to bring a lot of attention to the single length concept. And you know, who knows what our sales would have been without Bryson having come out on the scene. Certainly there was already a market for it, and we would have made, you know, sold some, but I have to thank him. His popularity is helped a lot. And now there's 10 companies that are involved in single link. So
is there really?
Yeah. Only us. And I believe Adele Golf has done their latest version. They've done a really good job. Us and Adele are really the only ones that have solved all of the historical problems that were found in single length. The other companies, I think, were just kind of jumping on the bandwagon real quick, didn't really do their research as deeply as we did.
Well, having Tom's not going to hurt. Well, talk about history. Okay, we're going to do this again. So, yes, episode 357 is when you talked about Speed Golf. But back in 2009, episode number 168, One Iron Golf, David Lake, the CEO of One Iron Golf, which is still around at oneirongolf.com, we did a whole episode with him about single length, and I was really intrigued by the whole thing. What is it for the average golfer? I mean, do you have to be a science geek to understand how to hit a single length club, or what is the advantage for me? I mean,
that's one of the things. Bryson is kind of, you know, he's the science geek. So
yeah, makes it intimidating.
Yeah. A lot of people think, oh, like, oh, well, I need to understand all these crazy things and be willing to be swing a little bit differently and all that to make it work. And, that's not really the case. The idea with normal clubs, they're varying lengths. So your four iron is longer than your pitching wedge, and the four iron head is also lighter than the pitching wedge head. So the MOIs are different, the swing weights are different, the weight is different, the length is different. So when we look at, or when I've talked to golfers about what they want out of their iron play, most of them just want to hit it more consistently.
Sure.
So the idea with single length, if all the irons are the same weight, same length, same lie angle, same swing weight, same MOI, same all that, it helps remove some variables to make your iron play more consistent. So just the design and the setup is more consistent. So
yeah, that makes total sense to me. What I don't understand, though, is on let's call them regular clubs, the shaft being different lengths, don't you have different swing speeds because of the length of the iron? And how is that impacted with single length?
There are, yeah, you get most of distance comes from the loft of the club. Okay. A little bit of the distance comes from the length of the club. So that was one of the things that Tom and I had to figure out was historically in single length, when you made all the clubs the same length, the distances would bunch a little bit. And then the longer length wedges, for example, would go a little too far. And the shorter length, say 4 and 5 irons, would go not far enough. So when Tom and I were sitting down at that whiteboard, we were like, all right, so single length, we know it's more consistent than conventional variable length irons. But how do we get the distance gapping right? And how do we get the trajectories to be consistent in what you would expect? How do you get the longer length irons to go the distances that you want them to add a little bit of distance? How do you take off a little bit of the distance on the wedges so that you get a nice even spread of distance gaps and trajectories and all that? And that I think is one of the things that really separates us, is Tom had this brilliant idea about in our 4, 5, 6, and 7 irons. Ours are based off 8 iron length. So in the 4, 5, 6, and 7, aside from adjusting the lofts in the entire set to help with the distance gapping, Tom also put his high COR faces. So like, he made the faces on the 4, 5, 6, and 7 more springy. So that helps you get a little bit more height and a little bit more distance out of those. And then he used a different steel, different type of steel in the shorter length. Well, the shorter, let me say the higher lofted clubs, so like the 8, 9 pitch gap and sand and lob wedge, to take a little bit of distance off that. So it took a little bit of back and forth of tweaking with the metal types and the lofts and all that to finally get it so that when we would sit up on a TrackMan, we would be like, wow, this distance gapping is like, it's really spot on here, and the heights are all really good. So it took us a little bit to figure out, but, you know, I think that was one of the beauties about this marriage of Tom and I in this project, is that I kind of knew what needed to fix, but I didn't know how to fix it.
Right.
And he was able to take care of the how.
Unbelievable. So then what kind of impact has it had on your, not your ball striking, but your scoring? Did you notice something? And was... I'm not going to ask the second question yet. So what was the impact on your scoring?
Well, I'd been dabbling with single length in 2007, but, so it was nice for me to be able to go back to single length, but then also, my iron play got even better because we fixed some other things too. We made, as with Tom LaShawn, you know, this custom club fitting guru guy, we built a high level of customization into these clubs. So you can bend the lie angles, so you can bend the loft angles. There's a hidden weight port in the hosel so that you can adjust for little tolerances in manufacturing deviations. And then you can adjust your swing weight and MOI and just really, really dial the set in. And so my iron play now is better than it's ever been because... Wow. I'm getting these single length irons, which are more consistent, but then they're fit to me and how I swing, and they're just they're custom fit basically.
Yeah. So when I so recently my, in the, la- oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So I was just going to say my iron play is as good as and better than it's ever been right now. So,
right. So, last year when I changed over, I got fit for clubs and I got a new set. There really wasn't a lot of adjustment period for me to get used to them. What about going from normal length or multi-length shafts, multi-length shafts right. to single-length shafts? What was the adjustment period that you noticed?
Interestingly, we just did a survey. We sent a survey out to all the people that have bought, and we said, how long did it take you to adjust?
Oh, good.
Right away, less than a week, 1 to 2 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks. I got to look up the percentages, but most people adjust right within the first week. Some people adjust like immediately. But I got these numbers here.
You don't need to be specific on that, but I get the point that if people just they went right to it and it worked well from the start.
Within 6 weeks, you've basically covered everyone.
Wow.
So
that's really
there
impressive.
Are some people, anytime you buy a new set of clubs,
sure.
there's going to be a little bit of an adjustment period,
especially in your head.
That's a little bit of the trick is like getting used to like a, you know, shorter 4 or 5 iron and a little bit longer wedge. But once you kind of get over that little bit of a mental hurdle and be like, oh yeah, I can swing my 5 iron the same as my pitching wedge and set it up in the same way. Once you kind of get used to that, then that's kind of where the consistency beauty of single length really starts to become apparent, I guess.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to get Tom on the show and have him talk further about the science of this, because I know that a lot of people just love to talk equipment. And Tom is the perfect person to do that. He really is.
Yeah, Tom would be better to, you know, talking about the technical stuff and
sure.
the metallurgy and like, you know, anything you want about how the clubs are made and all that stuff. I'm just a little bit better at more of the surface level stuff.
Well, we had talked about having him on with us for this call, but he's in Mexico enjoying his wife's birthday. So, okay, we'll have him on a separate time. That's not a problem.
Yes.
and so I want to make sure that if anybody's interested in this idea and you want to learn more about Sterling Irons from Jacob Bowden and Tom Wishon, I have a link in the show notes for today for you to go there. And if you're interested in doing that, make sure that those guys know that you heard about it on Golf Smarter. I don't know what it's going to do for you, but what's the incentive for our audience to go to your site and purchase clubs from you? Do we have any incentives?
Well, just more consistent iron play.
There you go. That's what you need to know.
do you want to play more consistent with your iron play? Then yes, then do this. Your game will thank you.
Well, maybe your next career is going to be in politics. That was beautiful, Jacob. All right, buddy. Well, it was great to talk to you. Good luck with this. This sounds really, really interesting. And you're still doing online lessons at Swingman Golf, right?
Yeah. So I got several projects, the Sterling Irons Project, the Swingman Golf Project, which is golf instruction online, basically. And then I just started a certification program for teachers as well. So three projects that are keeping me busy, and then I still have my own playing career aspirations as well.
As do we all.
Yes. So I'm planning on doing U.S. Open qualifying, and I'll go over to England again to do British Open qualifying, and so it's got a few tournaments planned for this year.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Well, our fingers are crossed for you, man.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
And we'll stay in touch, and best of luck with all of it. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes. Thank you, Fred. It was I always enjoy getting to talk to you here. So thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Golf Smarter Academy, presented by Health IQ, is up next. The Golf Smarter Academy is your opportunity to ask a question of Tony Manzoni. To leave your question, call 415-761-1498 or check out the full scope of our Academy offerings by going to golfsmarter.com/academy. The Golf Smarter Academy is brought to you by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, swimmers, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. If you've been thinking about your future and the security of your family, you understand the need for life insurance, and you need to do your research. Health IQ has broken the mold of life insurance coverage because they're the only company that takes into account your health-conscious lifestyle. And the earlier in life that you secure life insurance, the more you save. So if you're a non-smoker, the exercise you already do could save you more than 25% on a new policy. Health IQ is an insurance agency working with major insurance companies like Prudential, Ameritas, and Transamerica. And Health IQ is the only life insurance agency that will find you additional savings from these major players. So maybe this year's Valentine's gift from you is the gift of confidence. Confidence that if anything should happen, your family will be free from financial burden. If you already exercise regularly, eat well, and live a health-conscious lifestyle, then check out an insurance agency that's disrupting the industry with a common-sense approach. Go to healthiq.com/golfsmarter to see if you qualify. Get your free quote today at healthiq.com/golfsmarter or mention the promo code GOLFSMARTER when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Now, this week's Golf Smarter Academy presented by Health IQ is different because this time we're bringing back Jim Waldron. After listening to last week's episode, Jake from Boston was unclear of how many swing thoughts to maintain during a round and wanted more clarification from Jim.
Hey, Golf Smarter. This is Jake from Boston. Just had a quick question from last week's episode. Jim mentioned having one swing thought during a swing and focusing on just one thing. So my question is, throughout a round of golf, does that one thing have to remain constant, or can you think about different things throughout a round of golf, keeping one thought during a swing, but changing it up throughout the round?
Hey, Fred, this is Jim Waldron calling. I heard the question from Jake regarding my recent podcast, and I referred to how important it is to have one single focal point and not more than one focal point for your mind during the golf swing or any type of golf stroke. And the question was, is it possible to change the focal point throughout the round of golf depending on what type of shot you hit? And the answer is definitely yes, or at least it's possible for that to be a yes answer, meaning most of the good players I've interviewed over the years will use anywhere from 2 to 5 different focal points corresponding to the different types of shots. So, for example, they may focus on the target on all their long game shots from, say, 120 yards and out. They may focus on rhythm in all their pitches, chips, and bunker shots, so short game. And they may focus on grip pressure and putting. Maybe they'll focus on target picture again on trouble shots, like, you know, underneath a tree or something like that, or out of the rough, specialty shots. So certainly that is very common. On the other hand, there are some great players who only focus on target picture on every single shot, putts, short game shots, long game shots, trouble shots. So it is possible to only use one single focal point, although not very common. In the focal point system I've developed, I have people try a bunch of different focal points in 4 different categories on the range and in practice rounds. And then based on their own testing, find out which focal points work well for that golfer. And typically there will be a difference between long game, putting, short game, and trouble shots. So Jake, I hope that answers your question.
If you have a question that you'd like an answer from Tony Manzoni or another one of our guests, call our toll-free number at 415-761-1498. There's a button right on our website that will dial it for you from your smartphone or your tablet. And when your question gets answered on the show, you'll receive a copy of Tony's DVD, The Lost Fundamental. You'll also get a Golf Smarter Academy diploma. And if you live or have a mailing address in the U.S., you'll also get a workout shirt from Health IQ. For more, go to golfsmarter.com/academy. Oh, hey, Jake. Sorry about your Patriots, dude. But what a Super Bowl. What a football game. Oh, my gosh. And then that coupled with right before it was that sudden death playoff at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. An amazingly fun TV sports day for sure. Now, as far as information from today's show, details and links on the Golf Smarter Academy and the Sterling Irons single length irons will be in this episode's show notes. And let's not forget about our Golf Smarter Academy clinics at the College of the Desert Golf Center in La Quinta, California, with Tony Manzoni, Gary Hopkins, and Dave Evans, which they're offering multiple clinics every week. So there are plenty of opportunities for you to sign up. Our Golf Smarter Academy consists of 90-minute clinics with three instructors for only $75. Each clinic is limited to only 9 students, which means that you're going to get to rotate and get a half hour of quality instruction with each instructor. And it's not redundant instruction. You're going to get short game, you're going to get long game, you're going to get full swing. They're going to work on all three of them with you. They're spectacular. So, if you live in the Southern California area, or you're planning to be in Palm Springs, Palm Desert, La Quinta, or anywhere in that Coachella Valley, check out our live clinics at golfsmarter.com/academy. And if you have a specific date that you'd like to hook up with our three amigos, click on the link that will generate an email for us to secure your time. That's the Golf Smarter Academy on the Golfers Podcast and Face to Face. Now, for as long as we've been sharing this podcast together, I've mentioned at the end by saying, hey, click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com. But not everybody wants to do email. It may not be as convenient or quick as just reaching out via social media. So I just want to make sure that you know that we have that Golf Smarter page on Facebook where you can get in touch with me. Or if you're going to use Twitter, use hashtag Golf Smarter or hashtag Hey Fred. Talk to you next week.